Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, to find common ground and take it to the next level with David Clark here on Blog Talk Radio. Each week, the show will encourage you to keep an open mind and prepare to open the door to new understandings. We will have an exciting array of diverse guests who will point up the fact that we are all spiritual beings having a human experience. Now your host, David Clark.
Welcome to Different Strokes for Different Folks, where we will indeed be finding common ground and taking it to the max level. I'm your host, David Clark. I'm a spiritual adventurer, and I suggest you become the same. When you keep an open mind, you'll come to see that despite our seeming differences, we're all basically the same. You'll also see where you can find common ground so that you can relate rather than compare yourself to others. Now tonight, it's my pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Upton. She is a writer and motivational speaker based in Santa Barbara, California. Prior to publishing her first book, which was Secrets of a Nun, My Own Story, she was a nun for 2 decades. She's also worked as a family counselor, social worker, and probation officer for troubled youth. Elizabeth is a graduate of Syracuse University and earned her Master's of Arts in Psychology from Chapman University. She just republished Secrets of a Nun, which is her memoir, as well as novels The Shaman and the Mafia and Exuberant Women Don't Age, No Time to Waste. Her latest book helps individuals focus on real-world problems while bringing hopeful advice for the futures. In it, readers will learn about fostering courage and toughness from within, loving yourself, a gift of power and freedom, the strength and comfort of women's friendships, gaining emotional power, treating their body with love and affection, dealing with power and money, and the path to forgiveness. Now, to learn more about Elizabeth, you can visit her website at www.ElizabethAUpton.com. That's ElizabethAUpton.com. So with that said, let me introduce Elizabeth, and once again, I ask you, how are you tonight?
I'm just wonderful. And listening to this presentation, I'm humbled and excited to be on your program.
Oh, well, you know, it's a joy to have people who are humble on my program. And I seem to attract folks like that. And I think that that is a mark of having done the work on oneself to become truly human. Because there are so many people that hide behind facades, false masks, stay in their ego state, and don't know the first thing about humility. And you can spot them a mile away.
Yeah. It's a journey. Human life is a journey.
It absolutely is a journey. And, you know, we all have our own paths to follow. And I guess the challenge for all of us is to not judge another person based on outward appearances, because you never know what's going on or what's transpired for that person before that's made them the way they seem to be.
Yes, and everybody has a unique history, and when we do judge people, we're really judging ourselves, and when we don't judge people, we open ourselves up to love and to gratitude. It's a wonderful path to be free from the conflictual aspects of judgment and harsh judgments. As they say, you know, walk in another person's shoes. Who are we to judge anyone who is without fault? And so I personally keep that in mind day by day, and also as a writer.
Well, it's a real paradox that the judgment always seems to come back on us. And why do you think that is?
It's a history. It's part of the human experience that we're taught to judge people. Children, you know, actually left alone, playing with other children, are not judgmental. So through life, we learn to judge people and ourselves. And that's why when we become more enlightened, then we're able to see it for what it is, the falsehood. And also it frees us. That's what's so exciting, when we are not judging other people falsely. Or even if there is reason to judge them, when we let that go, then we are free within ourselves. We're more peaceful within ourselves. And we remove the barriers that keep us stuck. And what could be more wonderful than to experience peace of mind? It's the greatest gift of life. No matter what our situation is, when we can feel peaceful within ourselves, it's wonderful. And then we radiate that to the world, to everybody, whether we see them or not. It's our energy and our spirit that moves through the waves of the earth and gives hope and exuberance to people that we don't even see. That's the nature of living a spiritual life.
Yes, it is. And we are all meant to be free spirits. And there's no reason to stay trapped inside those shells that we sometimes hide behind. What recommendations would you make to people who are living in a place of fear and having a difficult time letting go and being genuine?
You know what? I've given, years of thought to this. And it's a simple, it's so incredibly simple, people just often ignore it. When we can get into one thing to be grateful for, that opens the door to love and peacefulness. I think often about the soldiers in the hospitals that I've visited, those that can't blink their eyes, those that cannot even lift their finger. We have so much to be grateful for. And when we get into this spirit of gratitude, it frees us from all our handicaps, our emotional blocks. It opens the door to a whole new life. And it's such a simple thing. I've thought about, what about doing this and what about doing that and taking this course and listening to Elizabeth? No. The most wonderful thing to do is to find something to be grateful for hour by hour, day by day. And it's a wonderful adventure. It is so profoundly simple. But it's we no longer waste our life when we're grateful. Don't you find it to be incredibly simple and amazingly ignored?
Yes, and I find that when I stay in that place of gratitude, that then I find my own joy. And when I remain aware of my feeling state, if I start to slip from that place of joy, then I can take steps to reclaim it. I once heard it said by Esther Hicks, who channels Abraham, that there's nothing more important than maintaining consistent moments of joy. And, of course, Joseph Campbell said, follow your bliss. And I think gratitude is the gateway to that.
It's simple. It's easy. I remember walking down the block where I live with my little dog. And this dear man, he comes out of the house. He's older. And then he looks at my little dog, Misty, and he says, it's a wonderful moment when I can bend down and pet your dog. Think about it. Bend down. And sometimes we have to bend down and pass our fears and just pick the flower, smell the flower. We don't have to. It's not complicated. Today, often we want to make it complicated. Walk on fiery stones and you will get your act together. You will become fearless. No, you won't. No, you won't. The most wonderful thing is this infinite power of gratitude. It frees us up. It opens up to us a whole new world. And you know what? As you said, when you're grateful, you're really happy. You're joyful because you know that within yourself, you're more than being human. We're divine human beings, and we don't have to be stuck in our stuckness. We don't have to do that. You know, there is a way, and gratitude, I talk about it all the time because it works, only because it works. And as a writer, I feel that's what most writers want in the spiritual world want to do, is to give hope, to help people have a better life. And the foundation for that is gratitude. And when you're filled with gratitude and joy, then you're filled with love. Then you're filled with love. And life is not complicated. And we're able to throw and destroy and get rid of everything that robs us of the spirit of joy and robs us from gratitude. And this is so delightful. Well, children are delightful because they're joyful. They're always kind of happy.
Mm-hmm.
And they, in fact, they don't have to be grateful because they live in joy, and living in joy and innocence is the foundation of gratitude. We lose it as we get older because of our culture and because of life. But we go through all kinds of passages. We had the passages of childhood, our 20s, our 30s, our 40s, our 50s, our 60s, 70s and 80s if we're lucky. 90s, if we're lucky to live that long. And each passage that we go through purports a different challenge. Well, we are at 20, we're not going to be at 40. So we need different tools, different inspirations. But the one thing that continues to remain constant through all our passages of life is the spirit of gratitude. It's the one thing that releases anger and releases fear and releases unhappiness, because we can find something to rejoice about. And so it's not complicated living a spirit, soul, happy life. And it's not complicated to remove things or emotions that keep us emotional stuck when we return to the foundation of our life. I believe that when we were created in joy and in gratitude, you know. That's how I feel.
I believe that's true, too, and that we just become tainted by the ways of this world. And so the challenge for us, as I see it, is to cast those chains aside. And I, too, believe that gratitude is the pathway to abundance of all spiritual gifts, especially love. And I once heard it said by Anthony DeMello, the great spiritual author, Jesuit, that there are only two states, love and fear, and anything that does not stem from love is fear-based. And so, you know, again, if we can focus on gratitude, it does bring us back into that love light, and that's beautiful.
You know what, it's interesting what you said too, with these great authors, is we lose the sense of awareness. We get stuck in our problems and other people's problems. We lose our emotional balance.
Mm.
And sometimes it happens very gradually. But you can't be grateful and not aware. And that awareness is the wake-up challenge to live to the fullness of our potential, the fullness of our being. All these, everything, awareness, and it brings us back to the precious moment. And what happens is that many times we're living in a fog. We're foggy. We're not aware of this. We're not aware of that. And then what happens is the incredible fogginess of being addicted to iPhones. I got rid of texting because I got addicted to it. I said, sorry, I don't text anymore. You could email me, and I look at the emails with very judiciously, because it was consuming my life. I was ticking away. Like, I believe I was texting close to 60 times an hour, you know?
Oh,
and
my.
Then I was really... I was really sane, and it didn't last long because one day I was at a restaurant and I saw a couple next to me eating. They never spoke. All they did was work on their iPhones. And I said, wow, this is what I can become. So with the advancement of technology and the advancement of social media, we have to curtail these outlets because they can tangle and entangle us and consume our lives that we don't even know. We're not even aware of it. And so with the advancement and the rise of technology, we have to be aware of what is consuming our mind. And as soon as we become aware, we have to get rid of what destroys our joy and takes away the innocence of the moment. The precious moment is innocent. It's just so full of isness and beauty, and we've lost that. Children have it when they're loved. Children who are loved are totally innocent. And it doesn't matter how old we are, if we're male or female or whatever we are. All that matters is that we wake up. It's a process of waking up to what matters. The key is gratitude, and it puts us into the innocence of the moment, and then that frees us, and then we become truly, truly exuberant and truly, truly alive. And this is what is so precious about inspirational programs such as yours and all writers who write spiritual books to give hope. Doesn't matter how young or old, it's a matter of offering hope and offering a way to be free from all the entanglements, emotional entanglements. It could be addiction entanglements, so that we can really run with the wolves, run freely with the horses in our mind and in our spirit.
Well, it's so easy to get attached to outer things, including addictions, people, places, and things that distract us and that we may think provide the wellspring of our happiness, when in essence, the only happiness truly comes from within. And I'd like to talk just a few more moments about awareness, because as you say, the present moment is where it's at. Now is where we find our power. What suggestions would you have to people for remaining aware? It sounds like gratitude is a great key, a great tool for doing that.
It truly is. But one exercise that goes back eons and eons, and it's the exercise of breathing, being aware of our breath. For example, not only being aware of our breath, but when you take the great author, Thich Nhat Hanh, he has the breathing exercise as you walk. As I walk, I feel my steps moving in front, moving step by step. Our minds have become so busy with social media, so busy with distractions. We have to get into the simplicity of movement. And the greatest movement is the awareness of our breath and also walking. And what happens is our minds start to slow down. Our minds are so incredibly busy. We're overloaded with busyness, worry, fret, fear, anticipating the future, regretting the past. And so when we simply walk, feel our bodies moving forward, taking deep breaths, this is awesome awareness that slows us down. And then what happens is that we're totally aware without being aware that we're aware. It reminds me of horses when they have given birth to their babies, their foals. They're out in the pasture. They appear to be grazing, but they are aware of what is happening in the environment because they're relaxed and focused. This is what we need to get back to, be relaxed and focused and aware in simplicity. Simplicity where our mind slows down. And then, believe it or not, our awareness becomes very, very expansive. It moves way out effortlessly without urgency. It's an awesome experience. Every day I walk, even if it's through the house, taking deep breaths, aware of my feet. And then I'm so grateful that I can move, that I can walk.
Mm-hmm.
And you see what I mean? And so the doors
do.
Very beautifully and very gracefully, effortlessly. And this is what we need to return to. It's what we're called to be, to return to the innocence of awareness and the innocence of gratitude and the innocence of movement without overloading ourselves, because we're overloaded anyway. Get rid of watching news. Get rid of reading anything that distresses us. Sometimes I've given retreats where this is all we do, is get into the simplicity of the moment. And believe me, people scream and holler for their phones. Scream and holler. They're all up in the vestibule somewhere with their name tags on. I must find out what's happening. And they go through a detox, an emotional detox from the busyness of life, you know, from the obsession, the absolute obsession that money is going to solve their problems, that a relationship or a divorce will solve their problems. And so most of the retreat is detoxing from this emotional overload, because it's all encompassing. And then when that happens, then the individuals are free to receive what they have lost from the beginning. They go back to the innocence and purity of their spiritual being, and they're free. Even though they may have physical problems, you know, family problems, they are able to embrace strength from within themselves and from the Lord God of our being. And this can carry on for a lifetime, and when people start to drift away, they can return to the essence of who they are. It's not complicated, and we don't have to walk on fiery stones to achieve this. We don't have to do months and months of being in a monastery. We can do it every day simply and wonderfully, and that will transform our lives. Then we are changed, and we become free. And then we're able to see things for what they are, because we carry all these veils. Veils inside our mind, veils outside our heads. And we can't see the beauty of which exists within ourselves and within the world, because we're living in a tomb that we've created, and we need to be free of this.
Amen. Well, let's talk a little bit about your books, and then I'd like to hear about your own journey, which I imagine is documented, at least the first part of it, in your book, Secrets of a Nun. But why don't we start out talking about Exuberant Women Don't Age. I love the subtitle, too, which is No Time to Waste. What would you like to share about that book with the listeners?
This book was inspired many years ago, and I've thought about it, rewritten it. And the time in it, I said to myself, my goodness, we are supposed to be exuberant. We've lost it. And we lose it because we waste our time. We waste our life. And then, you know, it was a challenge, because I wanted to put 350 pages into 120 pages. I wanted people to be able to read a passage and to be able to chew on it like a savory piece of candy. And I was just looking at one place, which I wrote, getting stuck in other people's problems can result in losing your emotional balance, your joy in life, and peace of mind. This, I say, is just a nugget. When I wanted people to read this book and to chew on these thoughts, to open it up anywhere and get something significant out of it. So the inspiration of that was to make it easy on the reader to receive information, spiritual information, that could give them joy and freedom in life. So writing this book was a challenge to achieve this, and that's why I wrote it. It's not only a book for women. It's definitely a book for men who love women. And it's not just a book for young women, middle-aged women, older women, and men. It's a book for all ages, that they can open it up. So to write this book in a form that that people could just read and get something out of, no matter where they pick it up, was inspirational for me to achieve this. And I have to tell you, I'm delighted. I'm delighted that people are enjoying the book and that it's helpful. They could put it in a backpack, put it in their handbags, you know, carry it in their pocket. And that's the purpose of this book. And I have to tell you, it's given me a lot of happiness to write it. I write not only nonfiction books, but I also write novels. And the reason I do that is that they're two different mediums. People can get information and help and inspiration through the nonfiction books. And then with the novels, every novel I write and intend to write offers hope in the human drama. I don't want people to leave my fiction books feeling a sense of despair. I want them to feel, hey, we can change our life. We can achieve what we want to achieve. And so as a novelist and as a writer, that's what's exciting. Writing, to be a writer, as you know, it's quite a process. A process of moving and discouragement, and you go through all kinds of passages. But once the book is done, then there's, for me personally, a feeling of satisfaction and happiness, because I know somewhere in the world someone's going to get something out of this book. And the process, I have to tell you, David, the process of just writing the book also, I feel, elevates consciousness. Somewhere someone is getting help just by the very act of writing. I believe that we're all connected, our energetics all connected throughout the world. And so the process, even if I never published anything, which I published quite a bit, it hardly matters. The fact is that I'm doing it with love and with gratitude and with hope. This is what makes the difference, I feel, no matter what.
Well, that's an interesting concept, and I believe it to be true, too, that whatever we put out into the universe at any level, be it writing a book, be it spending time with another person, that it all creates an energy that spreads out like ripples on a lake to other shores. If you're casting a stone on the water, the vibrations just reach out and at some level touch everybody in the world. What do you think that's all about?
Well, first of all, it's called often in physics, even the collective unconscious, that we're one family, which a lot of people don't want to believe, but we are one human family, past, present, and future. And the very fact that we are birthed into this world at this time is significant. Everybody in the world, no matter what their journey is, they are significant. We're all one family. And you started out the program talking about judging people. Well, this is detrimental to do that, because as a writer, I know, or just my own life, I've grown to understand that, humbly speaking, I do make a difference. Everybody makes a difference, but I want to make a difference for good. And I want my legacy, my birth, and my journey from being a nun, living a cloistered life and doing social work, my whole life's journey is not without meaning. Yours is not without meaning. Everybody that's listening to our program, your beloved program today and in the future will be helped because we're exchanging our spiritual vibration, our spiritual consciousness. And it's like billions upon billions of lights flickering throughout the universe where we touch each other. Love is awesome. Even with this new Pope, Pope Francis, he has a Jesuit, he has a magnetic energy that touches everybody, whether they believe in Catholicism, that doesn't matter. What matters is that he is demonstrating love and goodness and kindness, as you are and as many of us are, and that we are not insignificant. We are not insignificant. Many people feel they are insignificant. There's no such thing as being insignificant. We are brilliant. We are magnificent. And when we realize this in all due humility, our life changes. And we can walk through our homes joyful because we know that by the very fact that we are here now in love, loving, forgiving, and being who we are and going through our process of life, we're making a difference. And people are being inspired and helped somewhere. And they may jump out of bed one day saying, hey, I have a reason to live. And the reason they have to live has to do with us because of our consciousness. I believe this firmly, but I must admit it's taken me a while to be so convinced. But it makes me very happy.
Well, you mentioned the word forgiveness, and I was just picking up on one of the things that readers will learn about in your book, Exuberant Women Don't Age. It talks about the path to forgiveness, and I'm curious as to what you might have to say about that.
That's a tough path, and I have to tell you, a situation in my life, it took me, and I'll admit it, 20 years to be able to totally forgive an individual that was very destructive in my family. But I worked, I prayed, I went to seminars, I went to confessors, I rolled the stones, talked to crystals, I did everything. But you know what, David? I didn't realize this. I didn't realize that the process of working toward forgiveness was already forgiveness. I was already in a state of forgiveness, and I didn't realize it. I didn't realize it until recently. All the work I was doing, prayers and this and that, wanting to be free of the anger and the resentment, and that I was already in a state of forgiveness. And then the time came when forgiveness for me was complete. And believe me, some people, it's a horrific a journey, but I want to tell you and everybody who's listening, the very fact that you are attempting to forgive, you're doing your best, you're already in the process of forgiveness, and it is meaningful. It's meaningful. And never despair or forgive or be hard on yourself. We're in a human journey. It's not an easy journey. It takes guts. And sometimes as you get older, it takes a lot more guts. But the whole idea is it's the journey and the process. My husband often would say to me, it's all about the process, baby. And I said, don't talk to me about the process. I hate the
Oh, I love it. Well, you know, when you were talking about already being in that place, it reminded me of Dorothy, who discovered there was no place like home and that she was already there. Mm-hmm. You know, a lot of times we just lose that awareness that we're already in that place or on that pathway, and we are our own harshest critics. And I loved what you said about being gentle with yourself. I mean, that's what love is. And, of course, Jesus talked about love and forgiveness as a pathway to freedom. And that's another section of your book. It talks about loving yourself. Would you talk a little bit about that?
Loving yourself, I believe, starts with compassion. Compassion is a very beautiful, merciful, gentle aspect. When we can love ourselves and be gentle with ourselves, then we have what we call compassion. Compassion is not pity. Compassion is expansive. Compassion understands that we all go through stages of life. And compassion, forgiveness opens the door to compassion. We can reach out to someone and say, hey, I have a feeling for you. I've been there in a different way. And this is the embrace of love. It's a wonderful embrace of love. So compassion for our journey, because believe me, to move into this world, it's quite a journey. And then to understand that we are loved by God from the other side, for all those who have different religious aspects, just to understand that we're not in this journey alone, that we are loved from the other side. And does it take faith? It takes guts. You know, raw nerve from time to time. But as a human being, what is so beautiful about being human is our ability to experience compassion and love for one another, no matter what. Because we don't judge ourselves. We don't judge the other person. When we judge ourselves and the other person, then we're filled with bad thoughts, bad experiences. It's a horrible way to live. But when you are compassionate and say, hey, but for the grace of God I go, and I love that passage, it sure says a whole lot. If I walked in your shoes, I would be a different person than I am now. Appreciate the shoes that we have to walk in. Appreciate who we are in our journey. Don't envy other people's journey. Just be who we are, because it's a very precious state to be who we are, where we are, and where we're going without fear, but with hope and exuberance. You know, this is, otherwise we waste our life and we waste our time. And then, however, if we have wasted our life and wasted our time, there comes a point where we don't have to do that anymore. And then we don't have to condemn ourselves either for all the time that we wasted. You see, that's the balance.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you've talked a lot, you've used the word journey a lot, and I'd like to explore your own journey a bit. You started out as a student at Syracuse University, and you became a nun.
Well, actually, you didn't even put it a different way. What happened, actually, David, was that at the age of 15, I decided that I wanted to become a nun. And it had to do with my heritage, my background. I was born a twin, and I was also a young athlete in aspiring for Olympic competition as a sprinter. But prior to that, when we were very little children, 8 years old, we were put in an orphanage, my sister and I, because my mother's new husband didn't want us. And so I had the experience of abandonment. And then prior to that, our father, our real father, didn't want us. And so we were raised without a father in our life. What it did for me was it developed compassion for suffering children. We live with abandoned children, children who were put there by the courts, children who were abused sexually, physically, mentally, children who were warehoused like we were because the parents didn't want them anymore. And that was the foundation for my eventual becoming a nun. When I was in high school, people, young girls and boys, they used to come to me just to unload their troubles. And I felt there has to be a better way to live and to be rather than to be an athlete. And so a religious congregation did accept me, and I couldn't believe that they would, but they did. And so it was an opportunity for me to help people who were suffering. I received my first training walking the streets of Harlem, New York. It was an astonishing experience because I'm a young girl, but because I made a very adult decision, I was just treated like I was had a master's from NYU in social work. And so I walked alone the streets of Harlem working with depressed and sorrowful people, people on drugs, people with no money, people from Puerto Rico. And at that time, because I have Spanish heritage, de la Cuesta, on my great-grandfather's side, I was able to speak the language to a certain extent. And so for many years, this is the life I lived, and it was also a very strict contemplative life. We spent at least, 6 hours of prayer every day besides working, doing social work, going alone to prisons, on and on. So that was an amazing experience. And toward the end of my life in the nunhood, I went to Syracuse University. I was able to get a scholastic scholarship, and then afterwards I left. And then I started a new journey as a mature woman in the world. I was very skilled with work, but I sure wasn't skilled with relationships, and I was shocked to beans how I was accepted or not accepted back in my family. So, and then later I, had my own private practice and became a writer, and I've been married for many years. So I've had a diverse experience in life.
I have.
I think it really influences my...
What is your greatest joy of being a motivational speaker these days and an author?
I would go back to writing primarily. The fact that I can share my experience in the written word with the hope, and it is a hope, that people who read it will be benefited somehow. And then, as I said before, the act of writing, to have the faith that in the collective unconsciousness, it is helping someone somewhere. And as a motivational spirit, you get a lot of jazz and excitement when you speak before a group of people. And I would say awards, you're rewarded by that experience. But nonetheless, I would say writing and publishing books is probably the most satisfied experience in a different way. So they're both meaningful. But when a person has a book in their hand, or if they're downloading it in Kindle or whatever, they will have it. They will forget in time. They will forget the motivational experience, unless they take the books. But what they can remember and refer to is the books written. So that I would say ultimately, it's very, very fulfilling for me. It gives me great joy. Sometimes I admit that there's periods of getting into a funk. Well, it should do better, or then getting into the exaltation, how great this is. So it's the whole process of being a writer, and I think it's a lonely life in some respects, because no one understands how these people work in the tomb hour after hour writing all this stuff. People don't understand it, and so. And then I talked to my husband. He doesn't understand either. Hell bells, he doesn't even read my books. So it's funny. But my sister, she's a great, she's my consultant and advisor. So being a writer, is an entirely different world. Being a motivational speaker is rah-rah type of experience. But I would say it's a whole different world for writers to be a writer. And when they get together, they can, in their own way, commiserate and talk and share and give each other encouragement.
Well, I agree with you about it being a whole different world and a very satisfying.
It's a weird world that people don't understand. They haven't got a clue. They may see you.
Yeah.
No, it's just like
I'd like to talk a little bit about words of encouragement to budding writers, but first of all, let's talk about some of your other books. What books would you like to talk about, and what would you like to share?
Okay, I can do that. I'm going. I pace back and forth as I talk to you. I'm holding the phone. I would think Secrets of a Nun. I'm very proud of my memoir. It's a terrific book. Humbly speaking, I'm proud of the writing of this book, and as it reveals the inner workings of a young woman, I feel people, both men and women, will love the book, and I've gotten, you would be surprised, so many men love this book, and I prayed that, it's a great book. Exuberant Women is entirely different, but I think it's a book that people can just keep on reading for years and years. And then, of course, my first novel, The Shaman and the Mafia. It was a long, big book, and the story kept going on and on. But what I love about this book is that even though it has a lot of darkness from time to time, in the end, the readers will be happy with the ending. It ends joyfully and happily. Joyfully and happily. And it just makes me so excited to know that I hung in there with this book. I hadn't been writing for a few years, and then one day I jumped out of bed like a wild person, said, I'm going to write this book. And I wrote it for fun, just for fun, for a year. And then after that, I said, I put all this work into it. Why not publish it? Then the next year, I really dug in and wrote it. And so I'm proud of that book. In a week, next week, my other novel, At Home Among Sinners, will be published. I'm proud of that book. It's a shorter novel, but it's a very gutsy, wonderful novel where you really get into the mind of individuals, into their emotions. And I feel that anyone who reads this book will be rewarded because it's a very good book. So those are the books I have published recently. And, of course, I'm working on other books. As I speak to you, I'm working on a couple more books. So,
of course, always, right? Where are the best places for people to find your books?
And mostly, they could go to any bookstore that's reputable, and ask for the book. If it's not on the shelf, they will order it from Amazon.com. If they want, and some people like to go to bookstores, some people like to go directly to Amazon. But it's easily received, and the prices are very reasonable to put it on sleigh. You know, it's not difficult. But some people just don't want to go to Amazon. Just walk in the bookstore and say, hey, I would like Exuberant Women, Don't Age, No Time to Waste, or Secrets of None, or The Shaman and the Mafia. Just go and ask for the book, and they will order it for you. Or go direct to Amazon.
Okay, beautiful. Well, it's interesting. You talked about The Shaman and the Mafia having a lot of darkness and ending up in a place of hope. We live in a world of duality where darkness is certainly present. And I'm wondering what you might say about the benefit of darkness or living in a duality such as we do in terms of bringing us to a place of light.
You know what? I feel that it takes courage and it does take strength to move through darkness. And I would suggest to people who are going through this, find a friend. Find a friend that you can talk to and to take your hand and to move through it. Being in the world of psychiatry, I have to say that one of the best, and we hate to admit it, as personal therapists, but one of the best therapies for people gets right back to AA. They have the biggest success rates of all psychiatric modalities, all therapies, because they know the theme is you can't do it alone. Acknowledge
right.
your darkness, and, hey, you can walk together and get through the darkness. Don't feel ever that you need to do things alone. It's a very hard place to be. There's so many groups and so many therapies out there, books, you know, motivational seminars to help us. We don't ever have to be alone in darkness. Darkness is a terrible place to be if you're there too long. We can always get help. And then there are people who refuse to get help. It is their choice. It is their choice. However, when we know someone is in a dark place, reach out. Reach out to each other and say, hey, I'm here for you. I can hold your hand. I'll get you to a better place. Hang in there with me. And, you know, it works. It works. And so it works for others. It works for ourselves. And this is
part of a lot of people mistake reaching out for help as a sign of weakness, and it really is a sign of strength, isn't it?
It's a tremendous sign of humility and strength. Our dear soldiers, are committing suicide by the thousands every year because they refuse to reach out and help. Because in the atmosphere of being a soldier, it means being tough, you know, and reaching out is being weak. And there hasn't been enough done to help people in this situation. So a sign of strength is saying, hey, I need help. So much in our culture portrays that as weakness. And of course, if you're deader than a dead frog, hell, bells, you've lost it. You know what I mean? We don't have to go in that direction. So I agree. Being strong is knowing how much you can do by yourself and when you need help to get it.
Beautiful. Well, let's talk a little bit about the writing process, what that's like for you. And also, I'd love to hear what you might have to say for encouraging young or new writers who may not have a clue as to how to go about it. They have the desire, but they're filled with trepidation.
This could take another hour, but this is what I'll say. First of all, keep your day job and then write. Don't give up your day. Don't give up your day job and save your money. The process can be very confusing because, you know, even in my Facebook, I have so much to say. However, if very simply, what I said, it makes a lot of sense. Keep your day job and write on the side. And I would say to all new writers, do not overload yourself with information. It's too depressing and too confusing. I would suggest if you want to be a novelist, if you want to write fiction, take a course from an individual who has actually published a fiction book. It'll save you time, it'll save you tears, it'll save you money. And that goes for nonfiction, published writers. All due respect to English people, English writers or instructors, because it's like giving birth. You can read about it, but believe me, there's a whole difference. It's really different when a woman is pregnant and gives birth. It's the same for writing. When an individual has actually published a novel or a nonfiction book, they have an entirely different experience. And I assure you, anyone who is listening, you're going to be a happy camper. Then you'll learn the process of writing. Number two, never copy what's the hot topic. Do not copy people's writing or what's up in the market. Be true to your own self, what inspires you to write a particular book and start writing it, you know. And then when you get serious, there's so many ways to go about that. But today you can be overloaded with information. Number two, The industry is changing faster than what a person can breathe. It's changing so fast. What has happened is that Amazon was ahead of the curve, much to the discouragement and to the lawsuits of publishing companies who were not. They're gigantic. They are the elephant in the room, but they are producing results. So know the difference between sending your work to an agent who may or may not get back to you anymore. Their attitudes of agents in the literary world has changed phenomenally. They have the technology to be polite. They'll simply say, if you don't hear from me, you know, we're not interested. I would suggest to most people who save money and to get PR experience before they publish their book, get as much knowledge and experience as possible in the process, and or hire people who have the expertise to do that. To get your work published in the literary world today will take 2 or 3 years if you're lucky. And often they won't do any publicity for your work. So it's a different world. But we do have the social media. We do have PR firms. But then again, you have those that are reputable and get results and those that aren't. Sometimes you just have to write for the joy of it. Another way of writing is to write your book, make sure that it's edited and that it's not sloppy, that it's first class, and you go and you can get it printed, 10 books, buy a printer and give it to your friends. That's a way of starting. Make sure they have a decent and good cover. So I could spend hours speaking about the process, but this is it in a nutshell. And be careful of people. Like, I've made every mistake there is. And one mistake I was working with an editor who had never published a book and then overpriced me, and I didn't have a clue what I was doing. And it was my own fault. So I need to take responsibility for that. Also, you know, if people want to contact me, just do it through my, you know, social media, Facebook. Say, hey, what can I do regarding this, this, and this, and you'll get a response right away.
Well, how do they find you on Facebook, Elizabeth?
Oh, they go to, you know, facebook.com, Elizabeth A. Upton, boom, you'll get it right away. And then, of course, yeah, and all my books in the back, I said, join the conversation, and I have my social media there through my website and whatever. But believe me, if I can make it easier for writers, having gone through the pits, I'd be happy to do that. And there's a lot of writers out there, and it doesn't have to be very complicated. But in giving workshops, that, you know, we got to cut to the chase and eliminate the grief that writers go through. They don't have to go through so much that they do go through. And then there's a lot of people who take advantage of new writers. So it's a very amazing, adventuresome, up-and-down process. And I encourage writers to do their best, but never to be sloppy. Make sure that when a writer is beginning the process, learn and be wise and prudent. And like I said, keep your day job, work your hobby in the evening, and save your money and get all the expertise knowledge that you need to.
Well, thank you for your words of wisdom around that, your advice, and thank you for all the inspiration you provided this hour. It's been a joy to talk with you.
And likewise, it's been a privilege, really. Thank you so much.
You are welcome. So once again, we come to a close. Now we can pause and reflect upon the idea that we are all united through the diverse tapestry of our individual gifts. There is no real thing as separation except in our own minds. We are each unique expressions of the ultimate source of our beings. We are spiritual beings having a human experience who can and will have a spiritual experience if we let it be. Have a great week, and remember, whatever you dream, you can realize. Good night, and God bless.
Thank you.
Thank you.